This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome. Welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Yehi Suhib in Washington. Coming up on Africa News Tonight...
The Office of the UN High Commissioner for Human Rights is urging the government of the Democratic Republic of Congo to investigate the alleged killings by security forces during anti-government protests Sunday.
That's Lisa Schlein reporting from the High Commissioner's office in Geneva. Full details coming up. Also, at least seven people died in clashes between security forces and worshippers who were taking part in a religious ceremony in Ethiopia. And twin car bombings in Benghazi, Libya, killed at least 33 people and wounded dozens more yesterday. We'll have these stories and lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight. Our top story, UN Human Rights spokeswoman Ravina Shamadasani said that Ethiopian security forces opened fire yesterday on protesters who were singing anti-government songs. Authorities said on Monday that at least seven people died in clashes between security forces and worshippers taking part in a religious ceremony marking Epiphany in Amara region in northern Ethiopia over the weekend, but they had yet to determine the cause of the violence. Shamadasani told the UN briefing in Geneva that the UN Human Rights Office was extremely concerned by the deaths. Ethiopian government spokesman Negari Lencho, reacting to Shamadasani's statement, told journalists yesterday that demands by the public should be raised peacefully. The spokesman said security forces should exercise restraint and avoid actions that could lead to death and injury. Twin car bombings in Benghazi, Libya, killed at least 33 people and wounded dozens more yesterday. The first car blew up outside a mosque in the Al-Salamina neighborhood. A second bomb went off at the same spot about 30 minutes later with the apparent intention of killing police and rescue workers. There was no immediate claim of responsibility for the attack. The United Nations mission in Libya condemned the bombings, emphasizing that attacks against civilians are a violation of international humanitarian law. The Office of the UN High Commissioner for Human Rights is urging the government of the Democratic Republic of Congo to investigate the alleged killings by security forces during anti-government protests Sunday. Lisa Schlein reports from the High Commissioner's office in Geneva.
The UN Human Rights Office warns this latest crackdown by security forces in Democratic Republic of Congo indicates a recurring pattern of repression against political opponents of Congolese President Joseph Kabila. It says UN monitors have recorded at least six deaths and 68 wounded during anti-government demonstrations in the capital, Kinshasa. They also report live ammunition has been used against protesters, 121 people have been arrested, and tear gas has been fired into churches in various parts of the country. UN Human Rights spokeswoman Ravina Shamdasani notes UN monitors also were attacked during the demonstrations. She says her office is calling on the government to investigate all incidents of alleged use of excessive force against demonstrators and UN personnel by security officers. She tells VOA there is no certainty the government will heed this call, but adds the Congolese leadership has an obligation to investigate.
People have been killed, people have been injured and arbitrarily arrested. It is the obligation of the government to ensure that security forces are handling protests in line with the law. And we will continue to call for this until it happens. There is an impact when we call on governments to cease carrying out of serious human rights violations.
Shamdasani says human rights workers will continue to monitor and report on events, and she says they will continue to ask the government to investigate. She also agrees the root cause of the country's political tensions lies in the continued postponement of presidential elections. Shamdasani says the High Commissioner's office is urging the government to work constructively with civil society, religious leaders, and political opponents to resolve this issue. If this is not done, she warns the violence and repression will continue. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
U.S. President Donald Trump's comments may have angered many African leaders, but not Uganda's Yoweri Museveni, who says he loves Trump's blunt honesty and thinks the United States has a great president. Halima Atumani has more from the Ugandan capital.
President Yoweri Museveni got legislators from the East African community laughing when he said he loved U.S. President Donald Trump. Earlier this month, President Trump allegedly called Haiti and some countries in Africa an expletive while discussing the subject of immigrants going to the United States. While some African countries, such as Nigeria and South Africa, reacted by summoning U.S. ambassadors to explain the insulting comment, Uganda's Museveni instead had praise for Trump.
America has got one of the best presidents ever. Mr. Trump, I love Trump. I love Trump because he tells Africans frankly. I don't know whether he's misquoted or whatever, but when he speaks, I like him because he speaks frankly. The Africans need to solve their problems. They need to be strong. In the world, you cannot survive if you are weak.
Museveni is not the only Trump fan in Uganda. Local radio presenter James Onen, who is known for his controversial comments, says many Africans believe their countries are the word Trump used because many of the best and brightest flee the continent for better opportunities. He thinks, however, that Museveni's comment was ironic. After all, he says, if African countries are bad places to live, is not that the fault of those in charge?
So it's almost an admission of his own failings. But secondly, I think President Museveni also is being strategic. He understands that by being in the good books of Trump, it might mean better things for him and less problems for him down the road.
Uganda's representative to the East African Legislative Assembly, Susan Nakauchi, agreed with Museveni's comments but says the challenge with Africa is that it does not have opportunities such as Western countries.
We should not leave outsiders to come and try to provide solutions to us. Because when you give them that opportunity, they come with their stringent conditions. So all these people would come to us with all these favors and whatnot. They expect something in return, maybe in terms of investment. So I entirely agree. Africa is full of very smart people, only that we don't have sometimes the opportunities that our people in the first world do have.
Museveni may have praised Trump for his comment, but Uganda's Speaker of Parliament, Rebecca Kadaga, did not let the comment slide. While meeting the U.S. ambassador to Uganda, Deborah Malak, on Tuesday, she asked what Trump meant by his uncomplimentary remarks. Ambassador Malak described the comments as disturbing and upsetting. Halima Athmani for VOA News.
The new executive director of the UN Children's Fund, Henrietta Fore, warns conditions for millions of children in war-ravaged South Sudan are seriously worsening as children face hunger, illness, and possible death. Lisa Schlein reports from Geneva.
Henrietta Fore has been on the job as UNICEF chief for only 23 days, yet she thought it important to visit South Sudan, one of the biggest humanitarian crises in the world, to assess the situation and see what can be done. She describes conditions as abysmal. She says the country is experiencing the worst food shortages in years. Acute child malnutrition rates that already are above the emergency threshold of 15% and escalating gender violence by all warring parties.
70% of the children are out of school. One third of those schools are closed, either due to violence or teachers running away or villagers running away so that there is no school. And there is, as many of you know, 17% literacy in the country. It's just too low for any of us to feel that you can have a well-governed country or citizens that will really be able to govern their country.
South Sudan's government and rebels signed a ceasefire agreement in December. Four says this gives her hope that people can move toward reconciliation and peace. Another hopeful sign, she says, is the government's intention to release some child soldiers in the coming weeks. UNICEF reports more than 19,000 children have been recruited to fight by all the armed groups. She says UNICEF is working hard to provide education, health, water and sanitation, and protection for children against violence. But she says funding is not keeping pace with the needs. Most contributions come from governments. Four tells VOA, in addition to this source, UNICEF is exploring new partnerships in the private sector.
We really are reaching out to corporations and foundations and individuals across the world. We think everyone should care about children and their lives and should care about young people. So our purview is the ages from birth through 18 years old, and that's a very critical element of all of our world.
The humanitarian crisis in South Sudan has gone on for so long, the UNICEF chief says she worries it is sometimes forgotten by the world at large. She urges nations to remain alert to what is happening there, as so many lives hang in the balance. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
You are listening to Africa News Tonight, live on the following frequencies, 15580 and 6080 kilohertz on the Voice of America. I'm Yehiz Wuhib in Washington. Sixteen past the hour, here's a recap of our top stories. At least seven people died in clashes between security forces and worshippers who were taking part in a religious ceremony in Ethiopia. Twin car bombings in Benghazi, Libya have killed at least 33 people. And U.S. President Donald Trump's comments may have angered many African leaders, but Uganda's President Yoweri Museveni says he loves Trump's blunt honesty. And for more news and information, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Uganda's cancer patients can finally breathe a sigh of relief after the country got a new cobalt-60 radiation treatment machine. But health officials say this may not be enough because of an ever-increasing number of cancer cases in the country. Halima Tumani reports for VOA from Kampala.
More cancer patients will now be able to receive radiation cancer treatment thanks to the installation of a new teletherapy machine. The old machine broke down in March 2016, leaving Uganda without that type of cancer therapy. Uganda and the International Atomic Energy Agency each contributed half of the over $812,000 cost of the machine. Dr. Rem Jackson, the director of the Uganda Cancer Institute, notes that every year for the last few years, there has been an increase in the number of new cancer cases. The Cancer Institute has registered more than 7,000 new cases, and the revisits are between 34,000 to 37,000 cases.
So that means we still have very high mortality, and this is contributed to mainly because our patients come late when their disease is advanced.
With a population of 40 million, Uganda would need 40 machines to meet the international standard of treatment for its people. Dr. Ruth Acheng, Uganda's Minister for Health, notes that there is still a lot that needs to be done to meet the treatment demand.
Currently, we are capable of treating about 80 patients per day. However, one machine is not adequate. Hence the need to fast track the next phase of our response to the crisis, and that is the modernization and expansion of radiotherapy services.
The restoration of radiotherapy services and installation of the new Cobalt-60 radiation treatment machine came only after Uganda got clearance from the International Atomic Energy Agency. Yukiya Amano, the Director General of the International Atomic Energy Agency, says in 2009 when he took office, the cancer situation in Africa was worrying, with 28 countries lacking cancer machines.
The IAEA has expertise in cancer equipment and training and safety. We are working with the WHO in close cooperation to provide better service to countries.
The Cobalt 60 machine is expected to treat its first cancer patient by April. Halima Athmani for VOA News, Kampala.
The American Lung Association says fewer Americans smoke cigarettes now than before tobacco control policies were put in place. In its annual report, the ALA says smoking rates among adults and teens are at historic lows. On average, just over 15.5% of American adults and 8% of high school students smoke cigarettes. The association gets its data from the Center of Disease Control and Prevention, which show the smoking rate declined from 20.9% in 2005 to 15.5% in 2016. Still, CDC data shows that nearly 38 million American adults continue to smoke. Also, the 2018 report found that poorer Americans, those who are less educated, Native Americans, and some ethnic groups have smoking rates that are close to 30% or higher. A movie produced by a German film student about the 2015 Mandera bus attack in Kenya has just been nominated for an Oscar. The short film, Watu Wote, or Swahili for All of Us, tells the story of how average Kenyans resisted Al-Shabaab. The film premiered in Nairobi yesterday night. For VOA, Rael Ombor was there and has this report.
The film is based on the real-life events of December 21, 2015. Al-Shabaab militants attacked a bus headed from Nairobi to Mandera, a town at Kenya's border with Somalia. The terrorists tried to coerce the Muslim passengers to identify the Christians. The passengers refused. The film depicts the harrowing encounter. German film student Katia Bendrath directed the short film as her graduation project at the Hamburg Media School.
We felt very good being nominated, because this is a huge achievement for all of us, and also, yeah, for Germany, for Kenya, it's just great.
Kenya, in particular the country's border region, has been struck repeatedly by Al-Shabaab attacks in recent years. Watu Wote explores the tensions that have arisen in Kenya over that violence. The film's fictional protagonist is a woman named Jua. She is taking the bus to visit her sick mother. We see Jua get angry at a Muslim boy selling water. A Muslim passenger named Salah Farah later asks her why, and Jua says her husband and child had been murdered by terrorists. Later, during the attack, Salah defends the non-Muslim passengers. He challenges the terrorists on the virtues of what true Islam is all about. Finally, they shoot him. The real-life Salah Farah died from his injuries less than a month after the attack. In the film, we see Jua sitting in the row behind Salah, her hands placed reassuringly on the injured man's shoulder as the bus escapes. Actress Adeline Wairemu played the role of Jua.
I started seeing life in a different way, because it's not every day you're attacked by terrorists and people have the courage to stand in and tell them, no, you're not going to do this and that and that. It's unbelievable.
28-year-old Abdullahi Ahmed played the role of the Al-Shabaab second in command.
It was hard acting as a terrorist, but the thing that I really wanted most is to spread the message that Muslims are not allowed to kill Christians, and our religion doesn't teach us to kill Christians, because in our Quran we are being told, lakum dinukum waliyadin, because our religion doesn't allow us even to kill an innocent ant without a reason.
The short film has already swept up awards at film festivals in the United States and is now up for a prestigious Oscar award in the live-action short film category. The director, Katia Bendrath, hopes the message of the film will be spread.
I think prejudices are not the right way to live, so I think maybe this movie could help to start again, look at the next person as a human being and not to a religion you don't like or a culture you don't like. I think this movie could really open up minds.
The 90th Oscar Awards ceremony will take place in Los Angeles on March 4th. Rael Ombor for VOA News, Nairobi.
The International Labour Organization reports the global unemployment rate is stabilizing after many years of a slump due to a faltering economy. This news, however, comes with a warning that unemployment will remain persistently high in many parts of the world. Lisa Schlein reports from Geneva at the launch of the ILO's flagship report, World Employment and Social Outlook, Trends 2018.
While the global labor market shows signs of improvement, the International Labor Organization reports more than 192 million people around the world are out of a job. The best results are to be found in developed countries. The ILO says unemployment in the wealthier countries is expected to drop to 5.5% this year, the lowest rate since 2007, before the onset of the global economic crisis. The labor situation, in many ways, has improved in emerging and developing economies as well. But the report warns employment growth in these countries will not keep pace with the increased numbers of people entering the labor market in search of work. ILO Director General Guy Ryder says he is particularly concerned that low-quality employment is on the rise. He says nearly 1.4 billion people are in vulnerable jobs, meaning they work in difficult, bad conditions for low wages with little security, and that 3 out of 4 workers in developing countries are holding down such jobs.
Very much more effort needs to be made to improve the quality of jobs. Despite the uptick in economic and employment growth, which is welcome, working conditions are failing to improve for a very large share of the global workforce. In addition, the projected employment growth in the service sector can be expected to make only a limited contribution to the improvement of job quality.
The report notes working poverty, defined as having income that is below the poverty line, is falling in emerging countries, but in developing nations, progress in this area is too slow to keep up with the expanding labor force. It says the number of people living in extreme poverty at less than $3 a day is expected to remain at more than 114 million for the coming years. The report's authors say the gender gap remains wide, with women more likely to have lower quality jobs and lower salaries than men. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
And that wraps up this edition of Africa News Tonight. Stay tuned for Straight Talk Africa with Shaka Sali coming up at 18:30 UTC. I'm Yehiz Wuhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voa.com. On behalf of our Africa News Tonight producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Kelvin Fowler, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, a look at President Donald Trump's first year in office, his successes and setbacks. We'll also take a closer look at his agenda for the year ahead. Join us for the next Straight Talk Africa.
Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.
Hello Africa, this is James Barty, host of Daybreak Africa, inviting you to join me every weekday morning at 3, 4, 5 and 6 hours UTC as we bring you the latest in African news, features and sports. You can also be a part of Daybreak Africa through our listener mail segment by sending your comments and opinions to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. You can also call us and leave us a voicemail at 202-205-9942. That's 202-205-9942. And when you hear the Voice of America identification, press the number 25 to leave us your message. Start your day with Daybreak Africa every weekday morning at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC on the Voice of America.